Welcome into the KSO show. I am Mason Voth. That is Drew Galloway. Monday, August 18th. It is game week. I'd tell you to go to cats2ireland.com, but if you haven't gone in the last year, you're probably SOL. So you're just going to have to enjoy the game from home, 11 a.m. on ESPN. Not a bad way to enjoy it. You know, travel can be a hassle. Yes, with Dave Pasch, Dusty Dvoracek, a good crew. Not Joe Tessitore, like Drew tried, you know, psyching me out into, oh, no, it's going to be Joe Tess because he's already going to be over there for WWE. Thankful that's not the case for the ears of the people back in the States watching on ESPN. I just not a guy that I enjoy at all calling football games. So excited for that. And we've got a depth chart to talk about today, Drew. This is going to be a part of a couple of days here where you're just going to be fire hosed with content from us, where basically everything that we would do over the course of a week, 5 days leading up to a game, you're all going to get within 2 days. So today you're seeing this. Our game preview will also go live. So DY and I will be doing that later on today. And then tomorrow we have two KSO classics that you're going to get to take in: 1993 Copper Bowl and the 2002 Iowa State game. I told you earlier today, I am a little miffed because the Big 12 on Thursday and Friday, back-to-back days, is releasing the 2015 game in full, which I really wanted to do for this, and the 2017 game, which would have been secondary to me wanting to do 2015. So that'll be a next year thing. We will do 2015 Iowa State for sure. I mean, just an iconic game for the worst reasons. Maybe, Drew, maybe next year, KSO Classic should be like gross games where we watch just only nasty ones. Like if we can find 2018 KU, we make ourselves watch that. I'm trying to think what else would make that list.
Eastern Kentucky 2011.
Yeah, release the tapes, Brian Smoller. Release the tapes. We need to see it. Man, I'm trying to think like, what else would be on there.
What is like sad about you bringing this up is 09 KU.
Oh, 100%. K-State TCU 2020.
Ooh, yes. We haven't watched a loss yet, but like K-State TCU in 2019 also. Yeah.
Or no, 2018.
Or yeah, 2018.
That was the 14-13. Yeah. 19 was actually a decent one. That was Max Duggan's debut.
So
gross.
We haven't really seen any gross games. I can't wait for the Copper Bowl episode. It might have been like just the general vibe that I had the entire time watching the Copper Bowl, but I thought that game was awesome.
I think it might be the best, like most enjoyable rewatch we've had so far, which is, you know, might be surprising to some because I do like to kind of go, it happened, you know, 30 years ago. Like that can't be good to watch, whatever. No, I was entertained the entire time. There was nonstop action. That team was just a lot of fun to watch, even knowing what the outcome was and that it happened 30 some years ago. So, I'm looking forward to talking about it tomorrow.
The Copper Bowl even got me to tweet like 3 times during the game while I was rewatching it. That's how you knew that I was like in a great state of mind. Yeah. I just finished the 02 Iowa State game right before the Climate Press Conference today. Hilarious game. Like I can't wait to talk about that game for other reasons.
Yeah, well, that'll be a fun one, no doubt about it. A little Seneca Wallace throwing the ball to the other team. Everybody loves that when K-State's getting interceptions. So we will have that all coming your way tomorrow. All right, you just talked about it. Chris Klieman had his press conference today. Before we get into the depth chart that was released to start the season, anything notable out of what Chris Klieman said?
I'll say that some of the noteworthy things were just more talk about, I guess we're about to talk about it with the depth chart, but Gunnar Maldonado, Colby McAllister, Asa Newsome, all not on the initial depth chart for this game, which, by the way, whoever made the call to go from like a depth chart for the whole season to now K-State doing the depth charts for the individual games, give that person a raise because that's been an awesome change. But it seems like Colby McAllister is probably the least likely of the three to play. The other two might play, but have played less in practice than the other guys in front of them. So I don't think that we'll see like a lot of Asa Newsome or Gunnar Maldonado if they were to play, but like, it seems like they might play. just like on a pitch count. And especially with Maldonado, I think that that makes a lot of sense from how everything has gone. Kleiman made the joke that the availability report just kind of makes his job easier because he can just say, wait for the report on Wednesday.
I'm excited for it.
And then I think the most interesting thing that he talked about was something that we have kind of mentioned on and off all season and for the last 18 months and the lead up to this game. By the way, I think that's why I can't wait for this game to be over, because I feel like we've just talked about it for 18 months straight.
We've talked about it probably for more than that.
But one of the things that he really highlighted and mentioned and kind of stuck with me, and again, just been something that we've talked about in passing over the last 18 months, is the thing that has given K-State issues when they faced Iowa State is beating themselves. And that Iowa State is built to be a team that is very consistent, and the fact that they don't really turn the ball over, don't have really bad penalties. And especially in the K-State games, and we talked about it on the Sunday show, Iowa State has only turned the ball over one time in the last five meetings between the two schools. And K-State has been prone to turnovers at a really bad time against Iowa State. I mean, we saw it last year against Iowa State with the fumble on the first play. It doesn't count as a turnover, but that safety that Avery took essentially was a turnover. And K-State has really kind of beat themselves the last two seasons against Iowa State, where the Cyclones have just been really opportunistic in the chances that K-State has given them. So I think that that's going to be something that you see really highlighted over this next week, whenever K-State speaks with the media. I know that when we get to Ireland, we get to rest for a little bit, probably get some food, and then head to an open practice where K-State will also have a media availability. I assume that we'll hear more about wanting to limit the big play on defense and then limit the turnovers on offense, because that's been what's killed them the last 2 years against Iowa State.
Yeah, watching it, that play back today, the safety that Avery took, that one sticks out with me, where it's just like in the moment you realize like, oh, that's really bad. And then just for some reason, I hadn't even connected to my head, like it was a field goal game at that point when that took place, and they could have lived to see another down after that too. Like it's not good. They have absolutely shot themselves in the foot the last two seasons against Iowa State in gettable games.
Highlights how bad both teams kind of played in last year's game too, that Iowa State doesn't get like a dagger touchdown right after that safety, and then it still ended up they only had to kick it.
I remember at one point in the fourth quarter, I went in to get set up in the media room already. I was done recording and I was like, this isn't going to be worth anything. And then like K-State got the ball back again and still had kind of a chance, and it's like I had to run back out there. It's like, Iowa State couldn't give the kill shot. K-State, we know that they were playing their worst football of the season that month, which I think actually that kind of thing should give K-State fans optimism that, you know, K-State was playing their absolute worst football last year, and the best Iowa State football team of all time, they were in the game in the final minutes on the road in Ames in a must-win for Iowa State. K-State had nothing to play for that game. So anyways, let's get on with the actual depth chart. Let's start with the quarterback. You'll never guess who number one on the depth chart is, Drew. It's Avery Johnson. But we're only really bringing this up because I think it is notable that on the number two line, we got a couple ors in there. Jacob Knuth or Blake Barnett or Dylan Duff, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. Based on the way that Chris Kleiman had spoken about it, it seemed like Duff was legitimately in the mix here. What do you make of those three guys all being named the number two quarterback?
Not totally surprised because of everything that we'd heard over the last few weeks. I did make an amendment because one of the things that will be pushed out before the game on KSO is a redshirt tracker to just kind of give everybody like another overview of how things look kind of before week zero. But we're kind of trending to the point where it wouldn't shock me if we saw all four quarterbacks play at some point this season. Like, ideally, you know, you beat Iowa State, you get out so big against North Dakota, maybe you see all three backups play in game two. Like, that is kind of the scenario that we're really staring in, because it doesn't seem like anybody really went out and won the job. Everybody's just kind of hung around. But I still think, like, Avery's helmet pops off or, like, something of that nature, you're going to see Jake McNews go out there. And I'm like 98% confident that that will be how that goes.
That's really all we need to say on quarterbacks. It's Avery Johnson. The other thing's fascinating, but Avery Johnson showed last year he could stay healthy enough to be on the field the entirety of the season, no matter how he plays. Moving on to wide receiver, though, top three, not all that interesting, with Jace Brown, Jerron Tibbs, and Jaron Bradley there. But then on the two lines behind them, Sterling Lockett, J.D. Davis, which you'd been alluding to, that you felt like he was probably in line to be the fourth receiver this season. And then Adonis Moyes or Caleb Medford, the New Mexico transfer. The Moyes thing, not overly surprising, because that's one of the names that we kind of heard pop up from some guys starting at media days that, you know, he was maybe turning some heads a little bit. So now knowing how they've put the names out there and kind of aligned the depth chart, how frequently do you think we see any of those four guys on the two line over the next, the next couple of games to start the season?
In meaningful snaps through the first 3 or 4 weeks, I think that if there's no injuries, we probably only see J.D. Davis. That's kind of how I interpret this. I don't know if there is a lot of trust factor with any of the backups at receiver yet. You're probably hoping that Adonis Moyes keeps his trajectory trending upwards, because I think that of the guys that aren't J.D. Davis, he probably has the highest ceiling of the three just because he's the youngest. And I think that he's probably the fastest of the three. But the noteworthy thing, though, I think it is seeing Moyes' name on the two deep means that he's probably trending to not redshirt. What does that really look like for him? It is tough to pin down, and I talk about it a little bit in the redshirt tracker. As I don't know how many offensive snaps he's going to see, but if you're already on the two deep as a true freshman, that means that K-State trusts you enough to at least play special teams. And I think that's probably where we'll see Moyes. And then as the season builds up, I think we'll see a little bit more of him in the receiver rotation. But I don't know how trusting K-State is to rotate our receiver right now.
You think any of those guys turn into wide receiver three by the latter half of the season?
No. I think that that's not where those guys kind of are yet. I think that J.D. Davis has kind of taken over what we have thought would be like Caleb Medford's role of, like, if he pops one in like two games this year, that's a successful year for J.D. Davis. I think it's still probably a year out for Moyes. This is Medford's last year, and Medford didn't record a single stat at TCU and didn't really do a whole lot at New Mexico besides hit big plays. But if J.D. Davis has kind of taken that role, what does this season really look like for him? And then I think that Sterling Lockett just kind of is what he is right now. Like, I think that you're going to see in more sets where K-State goes empty, it's going to be three receivers, Dylan Edwards and a tight end, than four receivers and a tight end, or four receivers and Dylan Edwards.
Now we can get to the real interesting stuff, because pretty clear cut at the top, but this is where now we start to see guys that are actually going to be on the field first snap of offense or defense. Might be some surprises or some things that were up in the air. The offensive line will look like this. John Pastore will get the start at left tackle in place of George Fitzpatrick after his medical issue. Taylor Poitier will be at left guard, Sam Hecht at center, and then at right guard, JB Nelson or Andrew Linegang, and then the right tackle, Terrence Enos. The notable twos behind them, Gus Hawkins, Devin Vass, Kyle Rockers, and Ryan Howard all made the two deep this year. A lot of young guys there, including Hawkins, Rockers, and Howard, all a part of a pretty big offensive line string that K-State went on just a couple of classes ago. What do you make of the starters at the top and what it would look like if somebody goes down?
Yeah, the starters at the top, it's pretty similar to what we had outside of Terrence Enos playing right tackle. And I think that's actually probably a good sign for K-State that Enos went out and won the job at right tackle, because, you know, Andrew Langdang, I thought, was solid at tackle against Rutgers. It has been solid at tackle when he's played really his entire career. So the fact that Enos went out and won the job is noteworthy. I still think that JB Nelson will probably see the first snap at right guard. And then if somebody goes down with injury, I'm pretty confident that as long as it's not Sam Hecht, we're going to see Andrew Langan get plugged in somewhere. Like, he is like that sixth man along the offensive line. Does that mean his career is a bust? Probably, because there were talks about him being an NFL offensive lineman throughout his entire career. But he has been like so important that he's been the sixth man. And this will be his second season, and then even played like fullback in a lot of the offensive line positions in 22. So he has done kind of a little bit of everything in his entire career. At the two line, I also think that you'll see Gus Hawkins get some snaps this year. We'll see on others. Obviously, like, if Kyle Rockers gets a snap, either A, Sam Hecht is hurt, or B, K-State is up or down a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, the other guys, I'm less convinced.
And the thing to think about, too, with this is, on the one line, you already have one backup there, obviously, in Nelson or Langdang, because whoever isn't starting will be the sixth offensive lineman. And I think either one of them you're going to try to get out there regularly. Hawkins obviously seems to be in line to get in that mix. And then they hope that at some point George Fitzpatrick can come back this season. And if he does, well, then it has to bump somebody else off of there. And you've got a talented offensive lineman who started games that can get onto the field for you. So it's that depth. K-State's probably hoping that at some point becomes obsolete sometime within the first six games of the season. Obviously, we don't really have an idea on the Fitzpatrick timeline and situation right now, but that's just something to keep in mind with that. We'll flip sides to the defense and talk about the corners first, because that's probably the most interesting and anticipated starting unit on the field now, because it might be the biggest concern. Zayshon Rich and Donovan McIntosh, they will be your starting corners, and then behind them it was listed as Jaden Rowe or Amarian Fortenberry, and then Justice, don't call him Clemens, call him James, but don't call him James Clemens, is the other backup corner there. What do you make of how the CBs set up on the depth chart?
Yeah, I think that it is really tough, because I think that there are three corners on this roster that have incredibly high ceilings based on what we've seen or just projection. And that's Zayshon Rich, Donovan McIntosh, Amarian Fortenberry. So obviously one of them wasn't going to start to begin with. Fortenberry's been dealing with a little bit of an injury. Sounds like he's back and progressing pretty well. And then Jaden Rowe, kind of the wild card, because again, he has elite measurables and traits, but we haven't seen anything from him yet. So kind of gun shy there. Justice Clemens, James Clemens, is really good depth at a position that I think that of the five guys listed, he may get the fourth or fifth amount of reps. And I think that he's also cool with that, and has been a good teammate throughout his entire time in Manhattan. Is somebody that can come in and just be solid. But I think that the top three and the rotation, maybe not right away, because Fortenberry, like I said, was dinged up a little bit. The three guys that you'll see more on the field are going to be Rich, McIntosh, and Fortenberry.
Offensive line and corner. Now that you've seen the depth chart actually in front of you, you know who's going to get those first snaps. Do you feel better, worse, or the same about how they might perform on Saturday?
I feel about the same. Offensive line, I just need to see how it all looks together, because there's just so many new faces or faces that they haven't really played much in their career but are about to now. Corner, I feel maybe a little like slightly better, but that's more of just looking at what they did in the Rate Bowl between Rich and McIntosh, and then knowing what Justice Clemens is, and then just kind of seeing Amarian Fortenberry back on the depth chart after he wasn't really mentioned a ton by Joe Klanderman last week, seeing him at least on the depth chart kind of makes me feel a little bit better. But overall, it's like pretty much the same. Like I want to see what they look like when the bullets are flying more than just seeing their names on a piece of paper.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the corners. Let's move back a level in the secondary, get to the safeties. No doubt that VJ Payne was going to be there at the top, but Quay Moss and then Wesley Fair or true freshman Logan Barkley get the nod at the jack. Obviously, Gunnar Maldonado not mentioned there, but we know that he's kind of battling back and through some injury. Jack Fabris, Daniel Cobbs, and Jet Dineen on the two line that came out with the safety. So where do you take the information that you get there?
Yeah, no real surprise, I think, with VJ Payne and Quay Moss starting. Quay Moss has had like the quietest but steadiest offseason, I think, of all the transfers, because he rarely gets brought up as like somebody that's like doing crazy things in practice. But every time that he is mentioned, like it's always about him doing something really well. And I thought that was kind of a noteworthy thing too from Klieman's press conference that I totally forgot about, was how he went on about how well Quay Moss has been doing at the field safety spot and has really taken that job. Wesley Fair or Logan Barkley, I legitimately have no idea who's going to be out there on the first snap. Like I'm not even ruling out that like Gunnar Maldonado could actually take that first snap, even though they have it listed as Wesley Fair or Logan Barkley. But it gives you a lot of confidence in what Logan Barkley can be, that he's gone out and has passed a lot of different guys in the safety room, passed every single player in his own class, because he's one of two true freshmen that are on the two deep right now. And K-State took a lot of safeties in the last class, and he is the one that has really risen to the top. So I think that's noteworthy. I think that the buzz around Wesley Fair is interesting as somebody that's kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. The depth at safety, I think that Jack Fabris is very solid. Daniel Cobbs, interception in the Rate Bowl. Yep. You highlighted it. I think that he can be...
I think like that was his only snap of the game.
I think that he can be fine at the field safety spot. And what's interesting to me is like having him listed as that true number two over somebody like Kenigel Thomas is what makes me think that Daniel Cobbs might be almost ready for the big time. And then Jet Dineen, kind of like Jack Fabris, just super steady, going to contribute a lot on special teams. You feel a lot better about this room when Colby McAllister and Gunnar Maldonado are a full go. But I don't have like a ton of pause yet outside of just like, this is going to be the first time Quay Moss is playing power four football. This is going to be the first real snaps that Wesley Fair has played on defense in a conference game. This is going to be Logan Bartley's first college football game. But it makes you feel better that you have a guy that has played in all 40 career games at one safety spot and with 30 career starts. Like VJ Payne can end up having some of the most starts for a defensive player in K-State history when it's all said and done.
Yeah. I mean, I would guess that number one, I like the path you're on where you're like Gunnar Maldonado might just be out there for the first snap anyways. It's just he's going to be on the pitch count. I think that might be the most likely outcome if he does play on Saturday. But if not, then I would think that they would just go seniority and give it to Wesley Fair. But, you know, I think Logan Bartley is going to play a lot of football and he may end up with the most snaps out of him or Wesley Fair come Saturday. But it's fascinating to say the least. And like you need to take your victory lap on it because you were preaching this since K-State got the flip from Wake Forest last year, where it was he's going to play early. Like he is the safety that, yeah, I mean, Noah King was the one that was ranked higher, but you were quick on it. Like Logan Bartley is the dude in this class.
Yeah, I'm really pumped. It makes me feel better because like there's been some like pretty big misses. Like I didn't really like Austin Romain as a recruit. So, you know, that you hit some, you miss some. Logan Bartley looks to be like a good pick.
Nobody remembers the misses when they turn out to be good.
I do. Those are the ones that actually stick with me more than like the misses where I think somebody's good and it ends up being bad.
Who's another miss that you thought was going to be terrible that ended up being good?
Early still, but I didn't really love Adonis Moyes.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. All right. We'll stop talking about last year's class. So you'll start talking into other guys. Getting into special teams, Luis Rodriguez has won the place kicking job. And then Dylan Edwards, the other notable one, was listed as the number one returner, both kick and punt, after, you know, there's, I think, a lot of talk like, oh, well, you know, he's the main running back now, may not use him that much. His usage may still be limited, but, you know, we've talked about it at one point this offseason in the last couple of weeks or so. I still think you put Dylan Edwards back there for the first kicks of the season because you want to try and pop one, and he's your best chance to pop one. So what do you make of those two notes?
Number one, Luis Rodriguez going out and winning the job and there not being an or with Leighton Simmering or Teagan Cobb. I think that that is something that should be highlighted because, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago that there was a chance that you saw that you could see like Luis Rodriguez or Teagan Cobb or Leighton Simmering listed as the kicker. So the fact that he went out and won it, you feel better, I think, I guess. Dylan Edwards, this is where I was actually going to really highlight game-by-game depth chart and why I think that that is, like, something that is interesting compared to, like, just doing a full depth chart. Dylan Edwards, I imagine, does kick return and punt return this week because you think that you're going to need it against Iowa State, potentially. Do you think that he does kick return and punt return against North Dakota?
No, and I don't think you need to, you know, like I think that's a perfect one where you tell, you know, Bryce Nuremberg and Devon Rice, every time the ball comes, you take it and try to do something with it, you know, see what you can do, give them that actual experience. I mean, cause what Rice had a few last year that he was able to take, maybe just the one at Colorado. And then Nuremberg was back there for a number, but maybe only got one or two returns off. So I think you want to use that as kind of an experience type of deal. Is, you know, once you get up, well, shoot, I can't say that. You may only return one kick in the game against North Dakota. So I was going to say, well, once you get up 14, well, you may not get another kickoff other than at the start of the half.
Even if K-State gets the ball first against North Dakota, I don't want Dylan Edwards.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Ball. Yeah, yeah, so get him out of there.
I think that this game, it makes a lot of sense for Dylan Edwards to be a punt returner and kick returner. I think that, like, against Baylor, it makes a lot of sense. Same with, like, Texas Tech, maybe even KU. Like, there are certain games where I think that you pick and choose, kind of like how the Chiefs did with Tyreek Hill. Like, that, there were games where specifically the Chiefs put Tyreek Hill at returner because they thought that they really needed to pop one or thought that they could pop one against this team. Mm-hmm. So you put your most dynamic player back there. You don't have to put him back there, number one, every single time, or number two, every single game. And I think that that's kind of going to be what we see more.
Yeah. All right, that is a look at the K-State depth chart, what you needed to know. I mean, there are other positions, obviously, but pretty straightforward.
Those are the only ones.
Yeah, Dylan Edwards and Joe Jackson, I don't know that I need to tell you about running back, because then they put every other running back that might play on the 2D.
They also put every tight end.
Yeah, same thing happened at tight end. I mean, what else was there
technically, the only quarterback on the roster that's not listed also is Hudson Hutchinson. So they basically left every quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, participation trophy Chris Kleiman, you know, PP Chris is what they're calling him these days. Just everybody gets to be on the depth chart. I mean, I tell you what, roster cuts being a thing, that may just be hey, we're gonna put all 85 guys on there.
But that also the depth chart you see, I think it's like 14 players on offense and 13 or 14 on defense. Like, you're also getting called for too many men on the field.
It's a great point.
Depth chart.
Yeah, you're gonna have to do a little bit of on the fly thinking if you're the coaching staff. Don't just blindly say, "All right, you're a starter," and then, you know, JB Nelson and Andrew Linegang are standing on top of each other like Amos and Byung-sun from Kicking and Screaming, making the mega person or whatever.
That's what's so funny about like football compared to basketball, because like basketball you can be like, all right, starters go in, but like football it's so dependent on what personnel grouping
I think
on the first play.
I think it would be hilarious if Jerome Tang started right now, you know, we're gonna start PJ Haggerty or David Castillo in this game. And then you get like seven guys to go through the starting lineups. And it's like, oh, you know, what are we doing here? It's like a state basketball tournament. Everybody's getting announced. But all right. Well, that's what it looks like right now. We've got Iowa State on the horizon for K-State, and we'll have more coverage throughout the week here at KSO, like later today when you get the game preview with myself and Derek Young. And then we will have KSO Classic, two of them tomorrow. We'll be traveling on Wednesday. Thursday, we'll pick things back up again because we will get a look at K-State practice in Ireland. We will get to talk to some members of the team after that. I imagine we'll do a little reaction afterwards. And then Friday, I don't know what we – well, actually, got a lot going on Friday. We'll find some time to make some things happen at KSO. And then Saturday's game day, and we'll have post-game live afterwards, Drew and I. Discussing the Cats and taking your questions there. So that's what we got going on with KSO this week. Ready to get the games actually underway. Makes football way more fun. So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Voth. Thanks for watching and listening to K-State Online. Back again later today and tomorrow with a lot more content, whether you're staying stateside or on your way to Ireland.